This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled to have back Doug Watson. Doug is the Chief Financial Officer of Dignity Health in Arizona. Dignity Health is part of the Common Spirit Health System, which is one of the largest faith-based health systems in the country, and just a fascinating, great system. Doug, we're going to talk to you about COVID-19, about what you're seeing in your area, about healthcare trends, and a little bit more. Can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Sure, Scott. It's great to be back with you as well. My name is Doug Watson. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the Arizona Division of Dignity. The Arizona Division is about a $6.5-7 billion operation. We recently welcomed Yavapai Regional Medical Center into our family, so we're growing and really have a pretty vibrant team in Arizona.
Well, fantastic. Tell us what you're seeing currently in Arizona with COVID-19, and any sense of what you're seeing currently.
Sure, Scott. We're seeing what we're seeing across the country. We had our big surge in the July timeframe, and then things had dropped back down, and we were really in a position where things were looking pretty good. In the last months, and really most remarkably in the last 2 weeks, we've seen a very significant increase in the number of both infections reported in the community, but also hospital patients and emergency room patients showing up and being admitted. In fact, in the last week, our facilities, we've seen a doubling in the number of folks that we have in-house, which is concerning. And we're also seeing some differences. So it's a younger group of people this time, which are still ending up in the hospital. So it's still a very serious illness for people that are not all elderly folk. But the other good news is we have more tools at our disposal as well now. So we have remdesivir, we have the new antibodies, similar to what President Trump was able to receive. We're starting to get that now on an emergency basis that is available for us. We also, I think, have a lot better knowledge of how to spot folks that have COVID and how to quickly isolate and prevent any further contact with people. So I think we've learned a lot. The other downside, unfortunately, or challenge is that our people are tired. I think we're seeing that across the industry, but nurses and doctors and all of our staff, have been working hard now for a very long period of time, and we're starting to see the increase again here as we're heading into the holidays, and it's just a very, very difficult period of time. And if we look across the country, in the prior surges where we had spots in different parts of the country, we were able to move resources. So within Common Spirit Health, we had a strong capability to be able to move resources around the country. It's not perfect because it's not easy to move resources, but we were able to do it. And the same thing with traveling nurses and others, we were able to, as an industry, move people around. This time around, it's flaring everywhere, and there really isn't that same opportunity. Plus, a lot of those folks have been working hard, taking shifts across the country for the last 9 months, and they're also tired. And so we really see a challenge, I think, this time. In the prior surge, we were trying to figure out where to find beds and where we were going to put beds. This time, I'm much more worried about making sure that we have nurses for those beds and we have respiratory therapists available for those patients in those beds. And even environmental services, making sure that we can clean and turn rooms quickly. It's very difficult when you're down people. And we also have the flu starting to hit up, and that's also causing people to be out ill. You can't have somebody come into work who's sick. So I think it's going to be a very different challenge for people this time around with the surge that we're beginning to experience.
In terms of the surge, is there any flattening out yet of infection rates that you're seeing, or is it still really on an upward tick?
It's still on a very steep upward tick right now. We haven't seen, with the exception of what's happened in the Northwest and a few other parts of the country, by and large, there hasn't been a significant shift in activity yet. And so we're seeing really across the country, we're still seeing the growth. Certainly in Arizona, we've seen that sharp uptick. I mentioned we've seen the case growth continue. It is flattening a little bit just in the last few days. That it's difficult to make any sense out of daily statistics. You really have to look at a little bit longer trends. But if you look at day over day, we have more people in the hospital today than we did yesterday. We had more people yesterday than the day before, and that trend is continuing. And we know that once you make an intervention and behavior changes, you still have a 2 to 3 week tail before it shows itself in a reduction of hospitalization. If you're going to continue on the trajectory, because somebody's going to be in the hospitalized tomorrow, got sick 3 weeks ago, originally, or more in some cases. And so I don't see today, I mean, we're not making significant changes other than advising people to hopefully stay distanced and follow the masking and other suggestions as we head into the holidays, into Thanksgiving. It's going to be a very, very interesting time as we see whether people are willing to change their behavior for the common good.
Well, it's behavior, and it's also, I mean, it's an absolutely horrible situation for our country and for healthcare workers who take so much of the brunt of this. And then for the individual person, it's behavior, and it's also the sense that there's only so much people could do about this too, that leaves people not really necessarily thinking they're selfish, but really feel like they're powerless to really make a change and just has to flow through the system. And probably the reality of all this is somewhere in between, but we do know that in terms of compassion and empathy for our healthcare workforce, it is a brutal time and they need to be protected. And it's very challenging.
It is very challenging. As I said, the good news is we've learned a lot. We also do have a much better supply chain for PPE, et cetera. So I think we're more confident that we've got the appropriate resources for people. But again, when you're looking at a nurse who's working 12-hour shifts and is now doing extra shifts in order to help us keep up with the demand from the patients, that's really hard on them personally. And at the same time, as you said, you know, they have their own family. They have people they wanted to see for Thanksgiving that they were planning to get together with, and in many cases had planned to take the time off over the holidays, you know, after a long year. That we've all been, certainly mentally and physically, it's been challenging. And so now heading into this, knowing that we're likely to see another surge as high as what we saw in the summertime, maybe higher, it's frustrating. And then when we see the positive lights at the end of the tunnel, you know, we're hearing about the positivity of the trials for some of the vaccines, and it certainly appears that there's a lot of reason to be hopeful. You know, it's still work to be done. We still have to make sure everything is going to be safe, and then we actually have to deploy something that is a logistical effort, very much like what we might have seen during World War II, where you're trying to scale up a manufacturing and a distribution at the kind of scale we're talking about doing in this country. We haven't done that for many, many years. It's going to be quite a challenge.
Yes, and take a moment, Doug, if you'd like. I mean, first of all, could not agree with you more. And I don't think people are sort of getting clearer and clearer beyond sort of the higher level of thoughts to really understanding how difficult this is for our healthcare workforce and how strongly our healthcare workforce has responded to this. I mean, more than anybody else, our nurses, our clinicians, our respiratory therapists, the entire healthcare ecosystem, particularly centered around hospitals, has responded to this like it's wartime. And I think that people are starting to really grasp how clear an effort that is by our healthcare workforce and what an amazing effort. Talk for a moment, without being partisan one way or the other, will this election have big impacts on healthcare or not? Any thoughts on that?
Sure.
You don't have to answer for your own. Go ahead.
No, it's interesting because obviously that's been a question on everybody's mind as we headed into the election. And we did a couple of virtual retreats with some of our advisors and others trying to get a sense of that. And one of the things that really struck me is one of them said, you know, it's just not going to matter because regardless of who became president, we have a set of issues ahead of us as a country that we're going to need to work through. Those issues remain. It seemed likely, and it certainly has the way it's played out. We appear to have seen a change in the president. We haven't seen a change in the Senate at this point. That may change in Georgia as we get into the fall, but it's still a very divided government. We still have people on pretty significant extremes of some things, which hopefully will lend itself to ending up more in the middle to some degree, and focusing on how do we address the things that are really problems for the people of the country, making sure that we have access to health care, figuring out how are we going to deal with the impending workforce shortage that we have coming. You know, COVID hasn't changed some of the underlying demographic realities. We have an aging workforce in healthcare. Many of our nurses are over 50. Many of them are even at a point at which they could retire tomorrow if they want to. And they're staying in the game because they care and they want to be there for people. But that's going to be an issue. Physicians, we have shortages of physicians in many areas. We haven't seen the growth in medical school capability to try to provide additional resources for that. So there are significant things that we need to resolve. They really aren't partisan to a large degree. I mean, the ACA gets people pretty fired up, but the reality is we still have to provide care to people somehow.
And Doug, let me highlight what you're saying, because I think you're right on. So much of the political hysteria and debate deals with the ACA and coverage one way or the other. And I think most of us that live in healthcare agree that coverage is important, and somehow or another, we've got to get to expanded Medicaid or universal coverage of some sort. I think most of us have come to that conclusion that you have to have universal coverage at some point. And I don't know what that looks like, but somehow you have to have it just as a basic matter of fairness to everybody, the health system as well as the individuals. But coverage is not access. And the real deeper problem in our country, coverage is an issue. The bigger long-term issues, we have 330 million people in an aging population, and there are just vast shortages of clinicians, providers, nurses, clinicians at every spot. And soon if you solve coverage, we are looking at huge problems in access over time that need to be solved. And that's not as politically sexy to talk about. It's a real practical issue. And probably to many of us in healthcare, we view it as the longer term. Yes, coverage has to be taken care of. But the longer term, if we don't have clinicians and providers, we're really in trouble, aren't we?
We definitely are. And we've seen some of this already manifesting itself. If you look back even just a few years ago, and we're still seeing it in some parts of the country, you can have very good coverage. You can have Medicare, traditional Medicare, which is a pretty good plan. And not be able to get a primary care doctor because primary care doctors are closed to new Medicare patients. We see that at different parts of the country. I mean, certainly it's been alleviated a little bit by health systems that have gone out and started to employ more doctors. And the health systems really, such as us, you know, have we're going to cover people regardless of ability to pay, et cetera, so we don't put in any kind of a restriction like that. But private practices had to because the economics didn't work for them, and they were in a situation where they had really more need than ability to serve, and so they had to figure out some way in which they were going to sort out who they were going to serve. Some organizations still do that. If you're with them and you turn 65, they are more than happy to help you get another doctor, but they aren't going to serve you because they only serve a commercial book. So those are things that are still with us. They're not going to go away. We need to be thinking at a governmental level about supply and demand. I mean, one of the things the ACA did was really address, as you said, coverage. It addressed the ability to get more people covered. It did nothing to help us with the supply. You know, how do we increase the supply of medical professionals? How do we, we're doing some things ourselves. Dignity, we saw that as an issue in Arizona. We have partnered with Creighton, who we have been partnered with for a number of years, doing the third and fourth year students. We're now going to build a full four-year medical school together so that we can mint more medical professionals in the community in which we serve. That also extends to nurses. We're doing a lot of other education besides just physicians with them. We're expanding our relationship with the other state schools in Arizona to look at, you know, how do we change the equation and get more people who are interested and qualified to get through schooling and be in a position to be part of that workforce. You know, across the country, we have many impacted medical schools. There are people who would like to go to medical school who can't, and that's something we need to figure out how to address. We need those doctors, and we really are going to need them if you look out the demographics 5 to 10 years.
Doug, I think you've hit a point well stated and couldn't agree more. There's this concept of med school weeding out people. And the concept is they've made it so ridiculous that so many people get weeded out or choose not to go pre-med because they can't be a doctor till they're 30, a fully practicing doctor till they're 30 or some age like that, depending on specialty and everything else, that they've made it incredibly difficult to become a doctor. And we need to figure out a way, because so many of those people that choose not to go to med school and do a medical career would be magnificent doctors. And so we need to figure out a way. It's not that we need everybody to be a doctor, but we certainly have to make it a lot easier to become a doctor, because it just weeds out so many people that we need for that profession, as well as nurses and so forth and so on.
Doug, absolutely. When they've got that passion, and then we also have to make sure that they don't graduate with $400,000 worth of debt, because, you know, again, when you start thinking about, you want those people to go practice in underserved areas, and you really want them to be able to build a vibrant practice. Well, if you come out with $400,000 of debt, your options are limited. You have to pay that off pretty quickly, which means you're probably just – you just don't have the same ability, I don't think, as a system to be as resilient. And there's a lot of people who just choose out because they don't want to end up with $400,000 worth of debt. And they just say, well, if I can't do it any other way, I just won't do it. And they don't.
No, that's exactly right. Doug, I want to thank you. It's always great to visit with you. The CFO of Dignity Health Arizona, you know, Dignity Health Arizona is huge. You do a magnificent job. You're a very thoughtful, insightful person. We appreciate you joining the Becker's Healthcare Podcast again very much. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Scott. It's a wonderful opportunity to talk with you, and a fantastic series you've put together here with the podcast. You learn something every time you listen to one of them with you.